Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
All right, the Media Project is underway, and we have an opportunity here. We have two editors in the room, and that gives us a fighting chance with Alan, don't you think?
We just hope.
We hope. Stu Shinsky is here, executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Pleasure to be back, gentlemen.
Great to see you. Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, professor, columnist, commentator, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you really think being nice to me is going to get you over the hump of what you did?
We're in the midst of a celebrity,
of
Rex.
Of what you did to me.
What did I do to you?
You wrote a column which a lot of people chuckled over. And
I referred to you as a celebrity.
Yes, that's right. You referred
what was that
to
adjective?
As a short celebrity.
I did not say short. Did I say short?
You wrote it.
You said Albany has a short celebrity.
Meaning
there isn't that many. There aren't that many.
We
got a couple
short.
Of television anchors and Shartok, of course.
Of course. We're a little short on celebrities.
And you knew what you were doing when you used the word short.
Well,
I know you did.
Well,
admit it. Just admit it.
What do you know?
Rex is a wordsmith. Not just a Rex
a
smith.
Wordsmith.
He's a wordsmith.
I love it,
Stu.
All right, folks. It's an opportunity, which we hope not to miss, for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, a little insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, your putative host here. We want to talk about a program that I heard here on WAMC. It was on President's Day, and so normal programming had been preempted to give hardworking folks like Joe Donahue a day off. And in the midst of this, there was a fine program that was really fascinating I was listening to called King Stories. It was a syndicated program, and I was listening to Ralph David Abernathy talk about Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And they had Julian Bond on, and then suddenly my ears perked up because it was something that I thought I knew something about. It talked about the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which in the 1970s looked into the assassinations of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And I worked for that committee, or more specifically as on the staff of a member of the committee who had been a history professor. And so he knew something about research. He, too, had a PhD, Alan, so he was a smart man like you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Isn't that something? But this program then took a turn, because for one thing, it said that the House committee spearheaded by attorney Mark Lane. And I said, well, that's not true.
Yeah.
And then it completely divulged from any conversation about the committee and went into recordings of Mark Lane.
And he was a conspiratorialist, right?
He was a conspiratorialist. He was. He saw conspiracies in both the John Kennedy and in the Martin Luther King assassination. He appeared before the committee as the lawyer for James Earl Ray when they brought him in from prison and interrogated him. And Mark Lane made a big to-do and slammed his briefcase closed and stalked out of the room. And basically, this documentary put forth the proposition that Dr. King had been killed by an FBI conspiracy, and a very elaborate conspiracy that framed James Earl Ray, helped him escape from prison, and it went on and on about this. And I was rather stunned by this.
I think rightfully so.
Yeah. And it was very interesting programming. So we did a little research. We looked into who was the producer, and the woman who produced the program said in an interview that it arose from, amazing enough, a conversation with her good friend Mark Lane. That's what gave rise to the program, which is being...
I never had much use for the guy, to be honest with you. He's up there with Ralph Nader and a couple other people for me. Not that Ralph Nader is a particular conspiratorialist, but I do understand where he's coming from. First of all, as you know, Rex, the King family has never believed James Earl Ray was the assassin, for whatever it's worth, or there have been public statements of that kind.
Many members of the family,
yeah,
that is.
That's
yeah,
right. I stand corrected, and you're quite right.
Yep.
And the second part of this is that the FBI was known to be after King.
Yes.
And put, you know, all kinds of recording devices near him when he was allegedly making love to somebody who wasn't his wife. So there was the basis for that kind of conspiracy talk.
Yes, I think there is. I can understand it, but it's like a lot of conspiracy talk about JFK. There are answers to a lot of the questions that are raised, but the answers never
showed up
the volume as much as the questions that are raised, right?
Yes, yes.
Your point here on the media project, though, Rex, is WAMC should be careful of what it plays on the
air. Well, it actually shows, I think there are 2 points. One, it shows that stuff that sounds valid may not be so, that it's really hard, especially in the internet era, to distinguish thoughtful journalism from opinion. And two, this is going to be hard to admit. Alan, you were making a point in last week's show about needing to know the point of view of the journalist to fully evaluate the validity of the journalism.
Exactly.
You know, if we had known where this producer was coming from, we might have a better understanding of why she reached the conclusion she did about the FBI allegedly killing Dr. King, right? But I don't know, Stu. I mean, you wouldn't put a, just not to give Alan too much credit.
A disclaimer.
Here we go. You wouldn't put, like, at the bottom of a news story, the reporter's political enrollment.
No, I would not. I would not. I would not.
Well, you guys are both wrong.
Well, there's definitely discussion on that issue. You know, what I found interesting about this King item was, when does opinion, even if you know it's, quote, true or untrue, particularly the untrue, when does it get a valid place in a serious conversation? Okay. The conspiratorialists have been there for JFK and for King, and it may well be true. Maybe there is some hidden story there that the FBI knocked off MLK or JFK or RFK. But everything, to our knowledge at this point, has not been proven. So does it deserve a point and a place in that conversation just because someone says it?
You know, it's interesting, Rexy. I was listening to the station the other day where we're sitting now. And it was one of those 1 o'clock programs, I think maybe the Cleveland Club or something like that. And was introduced by the guy who had worked as the Secretary of Defense was on. And his daughter was up there and says, by the way, my name, and she was his interlocutor. She said, by the way, our names are the same because I am his daughter. Well, you know, I was impressed by that, and I thought it made me think a little bit about whether these were going to be softball questions or what. So there's another good example of what we're talking about.
I think it's fine to have biased points of view. I mean, we have that all the time on our opinion pages. It's just that there ought to be an understanding of it. It ought to be labeled. I guess that's Alan's point about
right.
It ought to be labeled, and there ought to be an opportunity for a response. You know, if this program had other points of view, it would say, well, the result of the House Select Committee assassinations in terms of the Martin Luther King conspiracy concluded that James Earl Ray had acted alone in shooting, but that he was not a very smart man, you know. And he believed, because he had heard talk in this prison that he served time in I think, Missouri, he believed that he was going to get money for this, that these unnamed people were going to find him and give him a lot of cash because he had done the deed.
Well, I heard when he got picked up in London, he had a lot of cash. Now, I have no idea whether any of that is true, but one of the reasons that has cast doubt on his doing it or not doing it is the fact that he got arrested and he was apparently well-heeled and somebody had given him some money.
All that I can say is the most thoughtful and thorough examination of this that was undertaken by the Congress, and I have confidence in this investigation because I know the people who did it, that it concluded that he acted alone.
But, Rex, here's the beauty of this whole thing.
Yeah.
You announced at the beginning that you were on the staff
that
of the congressman that was doing this.
Yep, that's
And
right.
I think that's all I'm asking for, that everybody, you know, have an honest scorecard here.
Well, and if it's a direct correlation, the child of the person being interviewed, where it's an obvious connection and potential bias or perspective, okay, but should I tell people that I'm on our editorial board and I voted for X, even if the topic is about garbage removal or fixing a street? I mean, does that require my disclosure of how I voted 3 years ago in a town board race?
Well, no, that's very interesting because, you know, let me give you a good example in Rex. Rex has a brilliant wife, a well-known author of several books, and somebody
who's a wordsmith, too.
Also a great wordsmith and immensely respected. He also has a daughter who's coming up fast and who is brilliant, too.
She's a wonderful writer.
That's right. So the question should be, when introduced anywhere, especially in the Albany area, should it be mentioned that Rex is the husband or father?
Does my daughter have to atone for my sins?
Well,
something like that.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I'm married, too, to a wonderful author and a wonderful woman. And on the top of her mind, when somebody says, let's have coffee, is always the question of, are they trying to
get somewhere?
And I'm sure you get that, too. That.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you too, Stu.
I get it. And my wife in her work, she works for a national nonprofit. She will have people come up to her, and clearly they are hoping to get to me so I can put something in the paper for them.
Yeah, right.
And
but you
my
never
wife,
even know.
But, you know, I never know. And if it comes to me, I recuse myself anyway because of that connection. I'll say, we have other people in the newsroom. Please work through them. They will help you out. If I have a personal connection, I back out immediately and I make it publicly.
Well, yeah, but then the problem is, this is a very interesting area. I hope we're not taking too much time on it.
Oh, it's a
fun. But the problem is, how will you know if the somebody that you've assigned it to doesn't say, well, he's the boss and I think there's a connection here. I better do something good.
They won't know. It'll just be handed to them from their editors.
My predecessor as editor of the Times Union, Jeff Cohen, was married to a defense lawyer. And sometimes we would be sitting in the afternoon news meeting where we put together the paper and we decide what goes on the front page. And I would usually sit next to Jeff and he would just get up and say, you take it from here, because he would have looked down at the story list at the daily news budget and he would see a case that he knew was his wife's and he would just leave the room so that it wouldn't be, even if it was clearly a story that wasn't a front page candidate, he just didn't want to have any connection to it.
It's objectivity. Objectivity. That's what we're trying for.
Well, yes, you guys are
trying.
You guys are such phonies.
Mr. Phony to you.
He would be Dr. Phony to us.
Dr. Phony.
It's
the question, of course, is do the other people on your staff know that this is something that could be helpful or not, even if you say they're just handed to them objectively without, look, these are very smart people that you hire, and they know the deal.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's an example. My little outside thing is I sing with Albany Pro Music.
You
and the
do,
ensemble.
And very well, I may say.
And I thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And they show up in the paper a lot.
Well, not as much as they wish. That's the thing. I never know if the concert's going to be reviewed. I never obviously look at the reviews.
But does the reviewer know who you are, is my question. Don't you see?
The fact is, I don't know who she is, interestingly. I wasn't involved in hiring the reviewer, and I would not, I don't think, recognize her.
Is that a staff reviewer?
Or no, it's a freelance.
Okay, so not a staff member.
I fear the lady doth protest too much.
Well, the last few concerts haven't even been reviewed, and I can feel my colleagues in ProMusica just kind of staring at me thinking, what's wrong with this guy?
And what makes you think that we here at WAMC, where you are a star, you are.
I didn't know you were in The Sopranos.
where you are a star. What makes you think we don't pay a little bit more attention to Albany Pro Musica otherwise would do? I sure hope
so. You know, there's no perfect framing for any potential ethical situation. You can only do what seems to be best and most effective. There's just no way to wall out every possible connection. I've had people tell me, well, you're tall, and I'm 6'3 and a half, that clearly you have a bias for taller people who are prominent in politics.
Yeah.
Someone has told me that. I was like, are you kidding me?
And the reverse is also true. I have people attack me shamelessly because I'm
brilliant
short.
Brilliant segue.
I wasn't going to say that. Anyway, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Stu Shinsky, and Rex Smith here, the professor and the editors. If you want to have your point of view heard, our email address, get this, is media@wamc.org. media@wamc.org.
Please write in.
Let us know what you think. Anyway, we need to talk about the coverage of Antonin Scalia's death. I have to say, I was impressed by a lot of the coverage that followed. I thought there was some insightful, thoughtful analysis right away. I was watching CNN, and Jeffrey Toobin was on for interminably. The poor man had to just... Yes.
I agree with you. It was interminable.
But it was thoughtful. I mean, he had a lot to say. He obviously had...
But they didn't put it the way I put it, right here on public radio, which was, he was a very brilliant man. You know, obituaries, you don't say bad things about people on the way out. It's generally de rigueur. But on the other hand, in some ways, he had a terrible influence on American politics because he was smart, very smart. So he could take his right-wing proclivities and paint lipstick on the pig and make it make him oink in a more attractive way just because he knew how to write well. But nevertheless, he was political, and I don't think that point got made a lot.
You don't think the point got made that his politics, his conservative politics, showed through?
I don't think the point got made that he was a bad man.
Oh,
and his conservative politics got through.
Well, maybe a lot of people didn't agree with you. You know?
No, maybe a lot of people were dead wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a lot of interesting things about this. And this did, as you noted, break over a weekend. And I happened to be with some family when this happened. And the first thing I heard was everyone started to talk about the political analysis. And one of the comments I heard was, can't they get the guy buried first before they before they move forward? Can they give the man, that whether you agree with him politically or not, can you have the respect of a prominent figure has passed away
on the way out?
Can you give it 24 hours before who's going to replace him? What's going to happen? Where's the politics? What's the president going to do? What's Congress stance? You know, I heard, yes, there was a lot of deep, penetrating, interesting coverage, but also, like, can't you just give it 10 minutes?
That came from Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, within 12 hours of the announcement of his death,
right away,
was already saying, we're not
body
gonna...
wasn't cold yet.
Yeah, yeah, right. Absolutely.
You know, when Abby Hoffman died, remember him? Abby Hoffman?
Right.
Steal this book?
60s Radical.
Right. 60s Radical. Mm-hmm. Thank you for giving context to the young people. Appreciate that.
The journalism connection here, by the way, is that he is Sid Sandberg's cousin, the Pulitzer Prize winner.
No.
Yes, isn't that interesting?
Abby Hoffman?
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
So you learn a lot here.
Yeah.
Who cares? So, okay, but here is the point. I never liked the guy.
Huh.
So when he was on his way out, like before the body was cold, I said so. Said I didn't like him, didn't respect him. And boom, did I get it for exactly the Shinsky reasoning. You know, you're a terrible person. Hopefully when you go, somebody will say have something nice to say about you, hopefully, maybe, before the body is in the ground.
People can be brutal. Ira Fussfeld, who is often here, worked for a CEO who was quite intensely disliked, and he died a very terrible death of cancer. And you should have seen the postings from the people who had worked for him saying, hallelujah, the man is dead. What a terrible thing. And somebody wrote in and saying, now listen, this man has children. You shouldn't be saying this about the death this journalist CEO. And the people just piled on even heavier. Good. I hope they know what a dead was.
That's
folks
interesting.
Can be you tough, know, you know, especially on the internet these days.
You know, when Everett McKinley Dirksen died before the internet, and I went to my mother, and it was a very bright woman, and I said to her, Mom, Everett McKinley Dirksen is dead. And she said, not a bad idea. Now, if you...
Has a federal building in Washington named
right.
after him.
Now, if you were to say that, you know, within that prescribed area, you would be in a lot of trouble. Luckily, it was just between us. I have let her memory live on by quoting that hell of a lot.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it is the modern news cycle. Everything is now, now, now.
It is.
And 30 seconds later, it's got to be fresh.
It is. Our sister newspaper, fellow Hearst newspaper, San Antonio Express News, broke the news of Scalia's death, and they were able to do that. And this is important for us to recognize because they had experienced people in place, because they know the land. In the old the line from the music man, you got to know the territory. They had it happened that the editor worked the weekend desk was their longtime former Washington correspondent, Gary Martin, who had a lot of sources in the federal government, who called him up and said, hey, by the way, out by Big Bend in West Texas, Scalia's dead. And it took them 2 hours between the time that he first got that tip until they were actually able to post it. And as soon as they posted it, then AP, Reuters, Washington Post, the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal both credited the Express News.
Well, you know, Rex, this is very interesting, this whole thing, because it didn't take long before the conspiratorialists were out. You'd started with Mark Lane.
Yeah.
And I saw why they were doing it, you know. I mean, here was this guy. The question was, the president says, I'm going to nominate somebody else. I'm going to put somebody else in there. And then the conspiratorials come out and say, oh, he may have been killed.
Yes,
he may have been smothered.
His head was under a pillow, I think.
Yeah, maybe been smothered. Yeah. And there will always be people who think that the chemtrails in the air is the CIA spying on us. But they get a lot of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
That's very unfortunate.
Speaking of, by the way, how the world has changed with the internet age, the advent of the internet enables you to do a thoughtful story. I mean, some of this stuff that sounds so thoughtful on the radio in the immediate aftermath of Scalia is because someone can go to Wikipedia right away or a variety of websites to get that. Whereas in the old days, let's say, when I was a reporter in the Capitol, I kept in my wallet a little card with the relevant facts about Mario Cuomo. If I happened to be on the road with the governor, and I followed him everywhere for 2 years, because we all thought he was going to be the Democratic presidential nominee, I would be able to dictate a story. and talk about the names of his parents,
great.
The name of his sibling and all that kind of stuff. And that was kind of like the old journalism way.
Now you just go to Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And I have to say this somewhat grudgingly, I think Wikipedia has gotten better. There was a point at which anybody could go into Wikipedia and put any, dare I say, crap down there, and somebody was going to believe it. I think they are now, they quite frequently put in need citation or,
I find
it to be a better source than it used to be.
You know, in our newsroom, we don't use it.
You don't use it at all?
We don't use it. We told reporters, you have to be able to verify it, what you see, because there has been such an issue. I mean, if you're talking about something, you know, like Babe Ruth played for the Yankees, okay, that's obvious. Mm-hmm. But if it's something more in-depth, we're saying, no, you got to double-check that, because there have been claims. But is it better? It might be. I haven't taken note of that, because frankly, we're not using it as a primary source.
Yeah, I think you actually have to verify everything. In fact, I was on a panel several years ago with Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia at Columbia Journalism School.
Josie Wales?
Jimmy Wales.
Not the outlaw.
The Prince of Wales. And a woman in the front row raised her hand and said, hello, I teach journalism at Brooklyn College, and I'd like to know, Mr. Wales, when do you think it's not appropriate for a student to cite Wikipedia in a research paper? And he said, well, my goodness, it's never appropriate to cite Wikipedia in a research paper. This is the founder of Wikipedia. He said, we're a starting point, but in terms of research, you don't cite an encyclopedia. And I think he's right. I'm actually rather stunned that a college professor had to ask, can you cite an encyclopedia or Wikipedia? Of course not. But it is a starting point. And one of the good things is they give you the citations so that you can go back to the original source material, usually even with hot links, which is a very cool thing made possible in the internet age.
Well, of course, there's still a lot of rotten journalists who'll say, I don't do it, but do it. And as you point out, it's a starting point. So that starting point means you have to go out, according to Rex and Stu, two very good editors, you have to go out and substantiate that it really was that way. But it's a very good starting point for a lot of people.
There's some very good information on there. It's a matter of, okay, is this your only source?
Sure.
And why? And honestly, okay, maybe it's correct. It probably is correct, but that one time, the public will look at you for the error, not Wikipedia.
Well, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the sixth grade. Remember when we all had to do reports in the sixth grade? And there was one major encyclopedia for young people. I don't remember. It was a World Book or something like that it was called. Mm-hmm. Everybody had the same encyclopedia. Mm-hmm. So you could go in with your composition and read along on your paper what the other guy who is now reading aloud was saying. Hence, you understand the issue with Wikipedia.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Finally,
that
was condescending, Rex.
Going back to... I'm sure it was good. freedom of speech we get to. The fundamental issue here at the end of the program. Last year, the FCC, which Alan was denouncing in last week's show, ruled that the First Amendment did not apply to internet service providers. And now we have Ajit Pai, who's a member of the FCC, who was opposed to that. And he said this could lead to more regulation of political speech. And I just want to read you something that this FCC commissioner said. I think that poses a special danger to a country that cherishes First Amendment speech, freedom of expression, even freedom of association. It's dangerous, frankly, that we don't see more often people espousing the First Amendment view that we should have a robust marketplace of ideas where everybody should be willing and able to
participate. God bless them.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to stupid, silly rules which some of these guys make up and which deserve to be fought in public and in court.
And he makes the point that what we're seeing, especially on college campuses, is where if my view is the majority and I don't agree with your view, then I have the right to shut you down, to shout you down, to disrupt your events. You know, and that is happening a lot.
We're seeing
people shouting down and in the name of I am offended, saying we don't allow this kind of conversation here.
It's so interesting that you say that. I'll tell the story really quickly. And that is, you know, I was at New Paltz once. The president called me in. I was up for tenure. I had to do it. And there was protests going on. And I told them what I thought they ought to do to get things done in Albany. And somebody stood up and started screaming at me. And I said, sit down and shut up, sonny boy. I live to regret that one. I'll tell you right now. I live to regret that one. And I had a colleague, Don Roper, and every time he saw me, he said, how are you, sonny boy? And that one lasted for 25 years.
They gave you tenure notwithstanding that? Oh, geez.
Right.
That might not happen these days, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of response might doom your tenure.
I might never do it again. Never. I certainly learned the hard way then.
Well, all right. Time for us to sit down and shut up, sonny boy. Stushinsky.
Sorry the program was so short.
I got it.
Dr. Chartok, I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on The Media Project.
Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.